This is the Health and Human Services Committee for Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. We have the agenda with two bills to be heard. We are going to reverse the order from the published agenda. We are going to hear Senate File 1674, Senator Benson's bill first, and so I would like to invite her to be at the testifiers table. And good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Very straightforward bill today, but before I get to my straightforward bill, I wanted to give just a little bit of background on the EBT cards that we'll be discussing today. So at the indulgence of the chair, I have distributed to committee members a short summary that council prepared for my own research, and I don't know that they were aware that I was presenting it today, and I apologize to them, but gives you an idea of just how complicated our EBT cards are because of the number of items that are on the EBT cards. There's a background on cases and then additional information on the SNAP program. The front page is the federal regulation that allows us to have some sort of identity on the EBT card as long as there's a provision for those people in the household not covered by that particular identity. And that was the nexus for the bill that was passed last year. And now if we could go to the bill language, it simply deletes the word "a separate" and turns it to and adds the word "an." Last year we were told we needed two separate cards because of the SNAP benefits that are on the EBT cards. We wanted to affect the cash portion and have been advised by the department that we don't need to issue a separate card. We just need to deal with head of household language, and there's a process in the department for dealing with other people in the household. So that is my only change to this legislation, and I appreciate any questions.
Senator Benson, I appreciate that. So just so that I'm clear, all we're doing here is making it clear that these benefits can all be provided for with one card. Is that correct?
That is correct. They can be provided with one card to the head of household, and if other people in the household need access to those benefits, the department already has permission and ability to give access to those other benefits. This did not have a fiscal note prepared, but it does reduce the number of cards printed by the department.
Okay. In your discussion with the department, any concerns or issues that they have about this?
There were no concerns. They did mention yesterday the possibility of bringing an amendment, but we haven't had a chance to vet that, and I checked this morning. No amendments had been offered. I believe they might come up on the House side.
Okay. And I just want to ask if there's anybody from the department that's here this morning that wanted to address that potential amendment or seeing anybody? Questions from members of the committee? I'm not seeing any. Is your wish just to have this? Does it go to another committee after this, or does it go right
to the
floor?
There's no need for it to go to another committee, and at the chair's discretion, if you plan to have an omnibus bill of some sort, I'd like to have it laid over. Otherwise, it can go directly to the floor.
Do you know what the path in the House is going to
take? The path in the House, I believe they are going to have omnibus EBT reform bill, and that's the path it would take in the House.
Well, I think why don't we, until I get some clarification on, I'm not sure to what extent we want to have a very large bill, but why don't we just lay it over for inclusion?
If I may, there are several other EBT bills that have been offered to this committee and are slated for hearings. Since this is a small change, perhaps in the future could be included in those bills.
All right. Then what we will do is lay this bill over on the table for possible inclusion in a larger bill, either an omnibus bill or just maybe a bill dealing with EBT issues. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Senator Higgins? I'm sorry.
I apologize.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I see that it is amending the same section that the first section of Senator Gazelka's bill does. So it would be a pretty easy amendment to add it into Senator Gazelka's bill.
Thank you. And maybe we can talk to Senator Gazelka about that when his bill comes up, but I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
and
Betts.
Senator Higgins, this does
microphone,
need to have
please.
The option. I'm sorry. This does need to have the option of getting to the floor because it is an important change. It does save us some money and it saves some paperwork at the department. And so while I would be amenable to attaching it, I want to make the committee aware that it needs to be a bill that's going to travel forward from this committee.
All right. At that, I think what we'll do is we'll just lay this over for possible inclusion then.
Thank you.
Future bill. Thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Professional editor for 25
yeah.
years.
Senate file 1507, I believe. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Happy Valentine's Day to you as well.
This is a gift horse you shouldn't.
Please, if you would like to begin, and I don't know if you have any amendments, or is this is the bill in the form that you wish to have it?
Mr. Chair, the bill is in the form that I wish to have it at this time.
And I will turn over to you, give you an opportunity to describe the bill itself and how it works, and then if you have any testifiers, we'll hear from them.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any testifiers. I do have a couple of examples from people in the Morrison County and Crow Wing County area that brought this to my attention.
I'm sorry, Senator Gazelka, can you pull the microphone closer?
Way close.
Like, we're having a hard time.
End of the
can you hear me now?
No.
How about now?
We have to give people
how about now?
Yes.
I'm too tall for my own good. Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 1507 is very similar to Senate File 150 last year that was rolled into a larger bill and was vetoed. Basically, this bill does two things. One is it changes a waiting period from 30 days to 60 days to get some of our welfare benefits. And number two, it requires a photo on the EBT card. I want to say that I had two constituents approach me separately. They were not related to each other and just sharing their frustration with the fact that we pay out welfare benefits for people moving to our state to get them. And they gave me two clear examples, and if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd like to briefly read them. One was the owner of a do-it-yourself moving company in Morrison County and said this summer a woman rented a vehicle and moved to Morrison County from Chicago. The difference in the response to the typical family and job questions was that she wasn't moving here for a job. She wasn't moving here for her family. She looked me in the eye and told me without any hesitation, no, we are moving here for the welfare benefits. We are going to move to Hennepin County, but they are running out of money, and it's harder to get on welfare. Unfortunately, that's only half of it. She proceeded to inform me that her sister was supposed to move at the same time as she was, but her apartment wasn't going to be available for a month. Sure enough, a month later, her sister showed up with the same explanation for moving to Morrison County. When asked if she was moving here for a family or job, she told me Morrison County has the best welfare benefits in the state. She then informs me that she needs to fill the truck with fuel and needs to get a gas voucher from the county social service office. At that point, I was astonished at what I had just heard, but I drove her to the courthouse anyway, and 10 minutes later, she came out of the courthouse, jumped into the truck, and we drove to the gas station. Watched her put gas in our company vehicle, then put the hose in her car with my gas voucher. I couldn't help but wonder how much the voucher was for. I would like free gas, but as my parents taught me, nothing is free. There always is a cost to someone. And he shared numerous stories like that one. And then I had one other one from somebody in Crow Wing County. Well, Mr. Chair, I think I left that one. So it was a very similar story, but just another person that was at the time chair of the Human Rights Commission sharing concern that we were creating a magnet situation for welfare when we really want this to be able to take care of the people of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll move to the bill just briefly. You know, 1.11 is where it shows the photo photo on the card is required for the EBT card. And then 1.17, it talks about residents' general assistance, where it changes it to 60 days there. It used to be 30, or is 30, I'm sorry. And the last thing I'll say is I was looking at the length of time that we wanted to have as an appropriate waiting period, and found that Wisconsin has similar legislation with a 60-day waiting period. So that was something that was upheld in their courts, I believe, about 10 years ago. I think their courts are probably similar to ours. And so that's why I picked the 60-day waiting period.
Senator Gazelka, there is a fiscal note that we've got included with the bill. Any comment you want to make on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, I did not see the fiscal note from this year. I had a fiscal note from last year. What I don't know is the cost for the photo ID part. Mr. Chair, last year the fiscal note was zero, so I'm assuming that that entire amount comes from requiring the photo. I will say that last year they broke it out into places that could save money. It's estimated 0.4% of the general assistant caseload, or 70 cases, become eligible each month and have been Minnesota residents for less than 60 days. That area saved $171,000 the first year and $228,000 moving forward. There was 0.3% that were MFIP. That saved over $435,000 a year. And then there was displaced worker program was 160 cases, and that saved $205,000 a year. So I think if you add the two together, if we truly count those numbers, I think it would show differently.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Gazelka at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gazelka. So, you know, I often have heard these bills before, and I think what always strikes me is the kind of anecdotal nature of members coming forward saying that they talk to their somebody. It's their local grocery store owner or whoever, and that this is what they say is going on, and then we kind of bring this forward, and then we want to spend money to change state law in order to presumably save money for an individual who talked to an individual in your district and said that they think this is a widespread issue. So I guess what I'm trying to find out, and I don't know if you know or if the department is here, is to try to get a handle on this issue of we are in a welfare magnet state. And so I think that that's a pretty profound statement if we can't back that up. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I would want to know either from you, and Senator, if you can't answer it, I understand because it's a lot of information, but one, can we kind of tie in how many people come to the state each and every year and that are new on TANF assistance versus how many people leave the state and go somewhere else? Because I think that that would make sense. Do we know what the benefits, in this case you said Illinois or Chicago, so do we know what the benefits are in other states relative to our state? Because I think that that also ties into what you're trying to prove is that somehow our benefits are better. And can we say that in, was it, what's the county that you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hayden, two counties, Morrison County, which is the Little Falls area, and Crow Wing County, which is the Brainerd area.
So are the benefits better in Crow Wing County than they are in Hennepin County? Because you said that as well. So I just think that if we're going to have a robust conversation, that I'd like to kind of get answers to that question to be sure that we're not just simply hearing, you know, I have constituents that sometimes say that and sometimes say, you know, other things. And I try to kind of work with this body and work with DHS to figure out kind of what is the truth. So I think that that would be important for us to establish a baseline of kind of all of the accusations you made about why you think this bill is necessary, because Minnesota, and in particular Crow Wing County, is a welfare magnet.
Senator Gazelka, anything you enlighten us with here?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Hayden, I think those are all valid questions. This is not my area of expertise. I don't serve on the health committee here, but I and most of my information is anecdotal, other than the fiscal note from last year where it talked about how many cases on a monthly basis they projected out that would fit into these categories. Sometimes I think it is difficult to prove why somebody is coming here, but certainly I think we all think that we want to take care of those in our state that are needy, that we can help, give a hand up. And my attempt here is not to prohibit those in Minnesota from getting the need or care from us that they need, but I do want to try to prevent those coming to Minnesota getting that benefit automatically that we have reserved for Minnesotans. So, you know, I'm certainly willing to have the dialogue with DHS and all of you here and have that conversation. And again, this is what I'm proposing is very similar to what Wisconsin has had for 10 years.
So, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Senator. I think that, you know, we all come here and we really want to do well, and we kind of have bills that we want to present. But, you know, Senator Gazelka, with all due respect, I think that those are the questions that you should have had answered before, frankly, you came to the committee. And that's the work that we typically do before we come forward to make sure. Because the thing that I worry about, Senator Gazelka and Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, is when we bring this forward, there is a certain stigma that we're attaching to people. And we're saying, so you said that this person said that the only reason why they came was because Minnesota had better benefits, and frankly, they would have went to Hennepin County, but Crow Wing County or the other county had better benefits. I mean, when you say that, you have to really kind of substantiate that. And so the baseline is really just to get the data to figure out if we really do have an issue. I mean, we do want to, we're not in a position to really spend money in this committee, and we're spending money. And one of the other things that you haven't addressed, Senator Gazelka, is no one, even in your testimony, you didn't say that somebody was using benefits that wasn't their benefit, right? And that's what the photo ID implies, is that somehow they're using benefits that is not their benefit. And so we have a very healthy and very strong welfare fraud division in each county that does a pretty good job at kind of sifting out if people are using their benefits. I would never say that someone is not, you know, smart enough to figure out how to game the system. But for the most part, in testimony in previous years that these types of bills have come forth, we have seen that they kind of catch people when they come in and try to build the system if they have some pattern. So I guess what I'm saying is, one, I think we really need to establish if there's a real problem here in a large way, because we want to change state statute. And then number two, to really address this issue that I think you're trying to get at, which you didn't speak to, which is fraud, and you want somebody to, we're going to spend $513,000, therefore, to put a picture on a card because we assume that somehow the person that's using the card isn't entitled to the benefit. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I think that those are the questions that we should have answered before we move forward with this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Gazelka, any comment at this point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hayden, you're right. I did not talk about the photo on there. I didn't see the fiscal note first. And certainly I wouldn't mind some more conversation about that. I don't think it hurts to have a photo on there. I'm surprised at the price that's been placed on that. As you get ID different directions, it is not typically a very costly event. But yeah, I don't think that having a 60-day waiting period for people moving to Minnesota is in any way being hard on people, and certainly it's not focused on taking care of the benefits for people in Minnesota. That's where my focus is going to be. That's where the focus of this bill is. So,
thank you. I don't know if anybody from the department, I think Senator Hayden has asked a couple of questions. I don't know if there's somebody from the department that could respond to some of those, if there's anybody here. Certainly would welcome your input.
And Mr. Chair, while we're waiting, as far as for the photo, in case somebody does ask, I know that there are federal regulations that allow it. If somebody has that question, it certainly is allowed to be done.
All right. Thank you. And could you please identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair, I'm Mark Toogood from the department.
Thank you.
I can't hear. I'm sorry.
You have to bring the microphone close, I guess.
Same thing.
Thank you.
It's not just me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Toogood from the Department of Human Services.
And Mr. Toogood, you were here and heard some of the questions. Do you have any information for the committee about the, first of all, the differences in benefits between Minnesota and surrounding states or other states? How do we compare on this issue? Or also, do you have any information about the disparity of benefits between counties in the state? Anything you can provide to us?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hayden, members, we do have some numbers, but I'd prefer to take one question at a time if I could and sort of focus on that. On the question of differential between counties, really we have a standard state benefit amount. The only variation between counties would be on how they conduct their emergency assistance program. So in the example cited about the gas vouchers, that would be true. There might be some variation between counties about how they actually dispense their emergency assistance. But otherwise, everybody in Minnesota gets the same benefit levels.
And with respect to, has the department done any study of recipients of these benefits to the state and determined whether or not there is a influx coming to the state that could be attributed to our benefit structure or how our benefit structures compare to other places such as Wisconsin or Iowa or Nebraska or other? Has the department done any systematic analysis of that question?
Mr. Chair, we do look at what we call interstate movers as well as other in-migrants. And as we understand it, that influx is no different than the influx of the population at large looking for new work, according to the state demographer. So for the Minnesota Family Investment Program, over the last couple of years, somewhere between 5 to 13% of people who are approved and are on our caseload have come from other states. In terms of state differentials, in 2009, the maximum monthly benefit for a family of three in Minnesota was $532. In South Dakota, it was $539. Wisconsin, depending on which program, is actually higher, $628. So every state does their TANF program, their welfare program, differently, and it just depends on the level of analysis that you're looking for. We have looked at the residency requirement, and it's our understanding that there is not a 60-day waiting period in Wisconsin, that their standard is actually their W-2, for their W-2 program, applicants must verify that they are current residents of Wisconsin and demonstrate an intent to stay, but we have not been able to find a 60-day waiting period for the W-2 program. So there may be another state program that does have a residency requirement, but our comparable program, we haven't been able to identify that.
Senator Lori, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gazelka. And I was going to go back to some of this, and it actually gets to the last point made by the department that, you know, Wisconsin did have a 60-day residency requirement that was taken through Wisconsin courts, but it never made it to any court that has any jurisdiction over Minnesota law. And so the constitutionality is in question. And a couple of differences, when they had it, it was repealed in, I believe, 1999. So it was in place for, you know, a handful of years in Wisconsin. It went through a Wisconsin court that didn't find a constitutional objection to it, but again, never made it to a federal court. And, you know, another notable fact was that, you know, right now in Minnesota, we're going from a 30-day waiting period. You know, this bill takes us from a 30-day waiting period with exceptions to a 60-day waiting period, striking all exemptions. I mean, basically, it's a strict 60-day waiting period. When Wisconsin did have their law, there was a list of several exemptions for people coming into the state of Wisconsin. And again, it was repealed 1999. So I think that there still is legitimate and weighty constitutional questions regarding this, and I think that it's...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Zelka.
I wish I had the name of my research person here, but this is from last year. Said that Wisconsin law only opposes a 60-day waiting period to their general assistance program and not their MFIP program. The Senator's bill imposes the deadline in both MFIP and general assistance. And then it went on to say, we know that 10 years ago in Wisconsin, a 60-day requirement was litigated and found to be constitutional by Wisconsin courts. Correct, not Minnesota courts. Arguably, the Wisconsin courts closely mirror Minnesota courts. So I guess we're need. I can't say where my source is because I don't have it on here, and we're going to have to clear that up.
Senator Higgins, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gelzelka, I have some questions about how the photo on the EBT card would actually work. The language of your bill said it would include a photo of the cardholder. And I guess my first question is a card issued to a person or to a family?
Senator Zelka?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I do not know that for sure. I know the kids wouldn't have it, but you know, as far as if there's adult 18-year-olds in the house, that's the part I'm not sure about.
Mr. Toogood, do you know the answer to that question?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, my understanding is that the photo ID requirement would apply to the head of household in this instance.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Gelzelka, what about the other head of the household? Would we require that there be two pictures for a two-parent head of household card? Oh, I guess my other question is there one card issued to a family?
Senator Gelzelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that has not been clarified in the bill. This simply says that there is a requirement for that. Typically, that would be administered through DHS.
Mr. Toogood, could you tell Senator us what Higgins. Current practice is?
Mr. Toogood? Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I'm a little bit out of my league here with the EBT cards. Perhaps we could have our experts come up and talk about that. That's an area that I'm not familiar with, so I'll recuse myself. Thank you.
I think I'm getting advised, Senator Higgins, that there is some discussion of that issue that you're raising in the fiscal note. I'm not sure if it's responsive to your concern, but
I've written notes all over my fiscal note, Mr. Chair.
On page 2 of the fiscal note, there is some discussion about assumptions about what would be entailed with the cost, at least as it's outlined in the fiscal note. And I guess we can hear further testimony. Please identify yourself.
My name is Tim Bonin. I represent department.
Sir,
and, yes.
I can't hear you at all.
My name is Tim Bonin. I represent the Department and Children and Family Services regarding the EBT area.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bonin, thank you for coming up to the table. Can you answer some of these questions? Is a family issued only one card?
Mr. Bonin.
The family can be issued two cards. The head of the household is issued a card, and an additional adult card can be issued to the household. Current practice is both cards would have access to food and cash benefits.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Bonin, whose name is on the card in that situation? Would it be both of those adults in the family?
Mr. Bonin.
With the current... last year's bill, which required the head of household name on the card, that the head of household name would be on the card for the head of household only. The additional adult card would not have a name on it and would only have access to the food portion of the household's benefits.
Well, that's interesting.
Senator Higgins?
So Mr. Chair, somebody somewhere makes a determination that one spouse is the head of the household and the other spouse is not, and the other spouse gets a card that doesn't have his or her name on it and isn't able to access the full amount that's available to that family. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Bonham?
When the applicant applies, they apply as the head of the household. There are members of the household. They may have a spouse, and you are correct in assuming, in your understanding, is that with last year's legislation saying the head of the household was the only person with access to the cash, and so there will be their card with their name on it will have access to the cash portion and food, and an additional card will be available for the family to access food benefits.
Mr. Bonham, just to clarify, the current process then is someone makes an application to the department for an EBT card, and that person is then designated as the head of household. Is that the process that is in place today?
That is correct.
And so the change that would be contemplated would be to have that person who's identified by virtue of making an application as head of household would also be identified with a photo. Is that your understanding of what the bill would do?
That is what we are proposing, yes. The bill as written does not clarify that. So in our fiscal note, we have proposed two options. One would be for the picture ID for the head of the household only, and then the option two would be for all members' picture on an EBT card.
And, Mr. Bonham, under current law, as the head of household applies for the card, that card has the facility to access cash, but then a second card can be also acquired by the head of household that would extend just to food benefits. Is that currently the law?
That is correct. The second card would be a household card for food benefits only.
So, Mr. Baum, just to be clear, then the current law would be that whoever is designated as head of household by virtue of making the application, I guess, would have access to a card that has cash benefits attached to it and could also request a second card, a household card, that would not have cash benefits that could be used by any member of the household or anybody who had possession of the card, I presume. Isn't that correct? It wouldn't be, there would be no identifying marks on the card that would say only these people can use that card. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's to enable the household to have to follow the USDA Food and Nutrition Services requirement of equal access for all members of the household to the food benefits.
And so, but that second card would not have the facility of being used as a ATM type card and for cash.
That is
benefits.
Correct.
Okay. And Senator Higgins, I know you've.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So this was something that was put into place last year in the Cone of Silence negotiations. Is that correct?
Senator Higgins, I'm not familiar with the Cone of Silence negotiations.
Was that because you were inside the cone, Mr. Chair?
I'm just, Senator Higgins, I'm just trying to clarify what the status of current law is as it pertains to the changes that are being contemplated by the bill. So,
so Mr. Chair, I guess my question was, what was it the year before? What was, how were the cards different the year before?
Mr. Bonham.
That would be useful for us.
Mr. Bonham.
Sure. Prior to last year's bill passage, the head of the household and the additional adult card had equal access to both food and cash benefits.
So,
and Mr. Chair, did either of them have a name on it? Or was it the same process, the one had a name and the other did not?
No, there was not a name on any EBT card prior to last year's legislation.
Okay. Senator Newman, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bonoff, has the department done any studies or any investigations, or do you have any information regarding fraud or abuse in terms of the use of the EBT card, either within the state of Minnesota or outside of the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Bonham.
Senator Newman, that I personally have not. That would have to, I'd have to get more information from our Office of Investigation, General OIG office, to answer that question.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you would make arrangements to provide us with that information, I would appreciate it very much. And, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up question on the residency issue.
Sure.
Are there any, maybe this is for Senate Council, I'm not sure, but are there any federal residency requirements in terms of welfare benefits, you know, what we're talking about, that would govern or preclude the state of Minnesota from implementing a 60-day residency requirement?
Ms. White, do you have any answer for us, sir?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the TANF program, which is the federal block grant for the welfare benefits in the state, each state determines what kind of program they're going to have. So there's no umbrella blanket, you know, federal residence requirement, obviously, on these. There have been, the U.S. Supreme Court has determined that some residency requirements are unconstitutional. One of them was the GA, General Assistance Residency Requirement here in Minnesota, that imposed a six-month residence requirement on applicants. And the other was when our MFIT program passed, it imposed a 12-month residency requirement on applicants, and that was found unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, a similar law was found unconstitutional in California, and as a result, Minnesota dismissed its appeal, determined that, you know, the same outcome would come of our statute. So those are the, you know, the federal or the U.S. Supreme Court decisions related to residency, but I don't know of any federal program that imposes a residency requirement on federal benefits. We impose a 30-day residency requirement on food stamps, too. So, but that's something we can do under the federal law. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Thank you.
And Ms. White, just to clarify, so the federal laws are silent with respect to residency requirements, but permit states to do things, although in some cases states do things that then there's challenges brought, and then they say, well, you can't do that thing. Is that essentially what the history has been?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If what the state decides to do is unconstitutional, then...
And how do they decide? Well, I won't get into that, I guess. If there's no law, I'm not sure how they decide that, but that may be beyond the scope of what we're trying to... I guess the main point is that there's nothing in federal law that says here's what the requirement is or isn't. And so states are free to do things that they believe to be acceptable, and if it turns out later they're not, I guess they're not, but there's no guidance from the federal government. Is that correct?
There's no guidance under statute, but there is
under case law at the Supreme Court level. Okay. All right. Senator Gazelka,
Mr. Chair, just one comment. That's why I picked 60 days, because I looked back and saw the case that 12 months was too long and 6 months, and I thought, you know, I looked to a neighboring state to see what they were doing, and that's how I came to that number.
All right. Senator Sherry.
Thank you. To that point, if council could answer, we're talking about numbers of days, what's going to be allowed and not allowed. What's important to me is what the principle is of the case law, what it is that's trying to be accomplished by barring states from this through federal court. What is the concern that the federal government is trying to get us to listen to about why restrictions on residency are problematic? What is the goal that becomes unachievable if you are restrictive in this way.
Ms. White, have you got a response for us, sir?
Mr. Chair and Senator, basically it's that it hampers the individual's right to travel, and it violates the Equal Protection Clause because then those people are treated differently than the people who are already in the state. So that's the concern.
Mr. Chair, Ms. White, could you say that again? Because I didn't hear it.
Sorry.
You're speaking of microphones.
I apologize.
For some reason, these microphones
the
today don't seem to be talking about the cone of silence. I think we have it here.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members, the court has found that these residency requirements hamper an individual's right to travel, which is under the Constitution, and also it violates the Equal Protection Clause because it treats people coming into the state differently than people who are in the state. And when these durational residency requirements are imposed or in the states, the U.S. Supreme Court has determined that some of them are unconstitutional. However, Senator Gazelka was correct in that the Wisconsin Supreme Court determined that the 60-day residency requirement was constitutional. It didn't, because it wasn't as long, it didn't impose as much of duress on the people, and so that case didn't rise to the level of scrutiny that the other ones did. So Wisconsin found that the 60-day residency requirement was constitutional. That one didn't go to the U.S. Supreme Court, though, so I'm not sure what they would have done.
Senator Lurie, did you have a question? Okay. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions on the residency portion, if I could. At the top of page 2...
Are you talking about page 2 of the bill, Senator Higgins?
Of the bill, yes. At the bottom of page 1, it says that the applicants can demonstrate, you know, their intent to become residents in certain ways. And then at the top of page 2, it talks about a couple of those. Getting a valid driver's license or a state ID card or a rent receipt. And then a voter registration card. At the very minimum, a voter registration card is the card by which you register to vote. They're out there in the libraries all over the place. I'm not sure that voter registration card is the terminology that you think you're using there, because anybody can fill them out, and it doesn't really mean anything. The other question I had was somewhere in here you say that, well, I guess that's in the bottom of page 1, that time spent in a battered women's shelter counts toward the residency 60 days, but it does not include any other type of shelter that someone may be in. We have homeless shelters, we've got chemical dependency type situations that could be considered a shelter. It's away from your home, but it is here in the state. So I'm not sure why you picked out the battered women's shelter as okay and the others not. And perhaps you could address that, please,
yeah.
Both those two.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Sorry,
Higgins,
okay.
That was a modification from last year, listening to people that may be fleeing from an abusive spouse. And I just felt like that was a reasonable modification to what I was trying to do. They're trying to get to a safe place, and if that's why they were here, and they're in a place like that, then I wanted to count that towards the time.
But Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, being in a homeless shelter or a situation like that, you don't think is adequate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, no. If you were a homeless person in whatever the state, and then you wanted to come to Minnesota, that is my intent to have a 60-day waiting period for that.
So,
Senator Higgins,
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, if you get here and you're looking for a place to live, and you have limited means, and there are communities here where rental property is really expensive. Requires first and last month's rent, damage deposit, all kinds of those things. So could be possible that even though you have some money to put toward housing, you wouldn't be able to find housing. That would mean that you're kind of homeless, but you're here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I don't see an exception for that sort of situation either. That clock should start to run for your residency. You are here. You may be living in your car, or you may be under a bridge, or you may be camping on somebody's couch, but you are here, and you I think that we're not doing anybody a service by saying that that doesn't count until you get actually someplace with an address and your rent receipt.
Mr. Chair, Senator, certainly I'm willing to work with you on that. I see where you're going on that. We did put in 2.11 another aspect of that for purposes of eligibility for emergency general assistance. The 60-day residency requirement of this section shall be waived because we're recognizing some of the situations. But I'm certainly willing to work with you on that.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, you say it shall not be waived. So you're actually taking away emergency general assistance by 211 and 212.
I do see what you're saying there, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins. I am willing to work with you on that part.
Are you willing to take that not out of
Senator
that
Higgins.
2.12 right now?
Yes, I would be.
Mr. Chair, on line 2.12, I will move to delete shall not and insert may.
Senator Higgins, just to clarify, so...
So, Mr. Chair...
You're saying that the 60-day requirement may be waived.
May be waived. Right. For purposes of emergency general assistance,
so
which is what Senator Gazelka said that he was willing to do.
Members on lines 2.12, the oral amendments, the Higgins oral amendment is striking the words shall not and replacing them with the word may. Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman.
To that amendment. We have an amendment on the floor, an oral amendment that Senator Higgins has just made, and so I want to take up that amendment before we proceed.
To the amendment, Mr. Chair. Okay. Before I'm asked to vote on the amendment, is there someone that could explain to me what would be available under emergency general assistance as opposed to non-emergency general assistance? What are we making available here?
And I don't know if there's someone from the department, Mr. Toogood. Do you identify yourself again for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Toogood from the Department of Human Services. As I understand, the question is, what does the county have to make available under emergency general assistance? And that is a county determination. It's left to them to figure out their own policy, but it generally includes things like referrals to emergency shelter for emergency shelter costs, emergency gas vouchers, things that address the immediate needs of the families who show up at the county office looking for that kind of assistance. So there's a lot of flexibility there.
And these are, Mr. Tuga, these are the things that you were describing earlier as variable by county in terms of what kinds of assistance is offered.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman, to the amendment.
Just a follow-up question. Is there some type of a state-imposed time limit on how long emergency general assistance can be provided?
Mr. Toogood.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, if I understand the question, is there a time limit for how long emergency general assistance can be offered? As I understand, and again, this is not quite my area, a person can only receive so much emergency general assistance within a given year, and I think that's determined by the county as well. So they usually have a cutoff amount, but the duration might be different.
Thank you, Mr. Good. And Senator Newman, it's my understanding, and I certainly can be corrected if I'm wrong, but my understanding is emergency general assistance was designed to be a gap between a more permanent assistance structure, and so it's to provide emergency help while the requirements, maybe that's applications or other things that may be necessary for a more permanent solution to whatever the problem might be. And that's my understanding. So I don't know if there's a defined time limit, but it's anticipating that there would be a shorter duration. It's not intended to be permanent assistance, is my understanding.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the reason I'm asking your question is, if we agree to this amendment, do we effectively eviscerate the whole purpose of the bill?
Senator Gazelka maybe would like to comment on that.
Mr. Chair, that honestly is my question too. I'm open to flexibility, but at the same time, if that doesn't end run around the whole process of having a 60-day waiting period, then I would not be in favor. I do, when I look at county determination, I like them involved in the process, but so that is my question too. I don't have an answer for that.
I do have some members who want to ask questions, and I know Senator Hayden. Is this to the amendment, or is this more?
No, this is to a different.
All right. Well, then let's come back to your question. And Senator Benson, is this on the amendment?
To the amendment, Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, let me get my words right. The emergency general assistance is a relatively small pot of money compared to MFIP, which is a small pot of money. This amendment doesn't eviscerate the purpose of the bill, but it does provide some gap coverage for that time, and so mitigate some of the discouragement for movement that might be some of the underlying intent of this bill. It doesn't completely undo it. It just backs off some of the hard line stop, I think, that you're looking for. And so while I would not fundamentally disagree with this amendment, it seems we're on a path here. And so I would take that under advisement.
And thank you. And maybe counsel can advise me as well. But the way I read the amendment, Senator Gazelka, would be that for purposes of emergency general assistance, which are decisions made at the county level, the 60-day residency may be waived or it may not be. It seems to me that it would allow some discretion by the county to decide on that. That's how I'm reading it. Maybe counsel has some advice. Ms. White?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And also, emergency general assistance is a capped appropriation, and an individual can't receive it for more than 30 days. And it's for an emergency need, which the county defines.
So I stand corrected. There is a 30-day limit on emergency assistance, and there is a fixed cap in terms of the dollar amount available.
Correct.
That's right.
Okay. Mr. Chair, to this amendment.
Senator Hayden.
So using your language, Mr. Chair, then we do actually, Senator Gazelka, start to get into what you alluded to earlier, which we found out probably wasn't happening, which is then counties do start to have a different benefit structure depending upon what they want to do. And so coming from Hennepin County, they often are worried about people coming from other counties to access their benefits, right? They and sometimes that's about the resources that are available to them, health care and other issues, and all the reasons why people move to big cities in general. But that particular language, Mr. Chair, that you kind of floated actually does then put pressure on, bigger counties, or frankly, bigger counties could say that they want to imply a residency requirement, which then in the inverse could put a lot of pressure on greater Minnesota counties that maybe don't have the resources in which to take care of it. I think we're on a very slippery slope if we start to give counties that type of discretion as to who they would serve.
And Senator Hayden, I appreciate your point. I'm reading this, and I could be wrong, and I'd certainly ask for correction, but I think the residency requirement is a state residency requirement. So the point you're making about could a county say you have to be a resident of this county before receiving benefits, that may be a different issue that I'm not certain that this bill is addressing. And again, I can be correct.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up, too, we already –
Senator Gazelka.
Heard earlier that the area that counties can apply differences is in emergency assistance benefits. So this is in that same area that they already have some flexibility of what they provide.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka. Well, that usually was about their appropriation, though. So most of the time when counties decide kind of how they're going to do that, that's based on the amount of dollars that they have and trying to figure out how much usage they have, and that's really where the flexibility becomes. If we introduce it at some counties are going to follow state law and do 60 days, some aren't, I'm just not sure, and I look at Senate Council, I'm just not sure if we could do it. But I may say this, Mr. Chair, and I know we're on the amendment. This bill doesn't look like it's ready. And if this is this the only stop before we get to the Senate floor before this, if this bill passes?
Well, Senator Hayden, given the fact that there's a fiscal note that has dollars attached to it, it would have to go to Finance Committee. But I don't think there has to be any other committees other than that.
Right. It does look like there is a – I mean, we're doing a ton of work on this bill and asking questions that, frankly, Senator Gazelka probably should have been answered before you got here. And we got department members of different – I mean, this is a little more complicated, I think, than what you thought it was going to be. And there seems to at least be a conversation with the department to know what the rules are, what we're establishing. There seems to be legal questions with this.
Well, and let's – before we get too far into the general discussion of the bill, and I appreciate your point,
Mr. Chair.
This is the – Senator Higgins has proposed that we strike the word shall not and replace it with may. And so I just want to make sure that was your intent, as I read it, to have it be permissive to permit counties to make some discretionary judgment about whether or not to apply the 60-day residency if this bill were to pass. It would give them that flexibility to do it or not. And if that was your intent, and before we move forward with that.
And, Mr. Chair, that's on line 2.12.
Yes. Okay. Are there other questions with respect to the amendment? Senator Gazelka, any advice at this point? Is this, in your opinion, a friendly amendment or
Mr.
one that
Chair,
you would like to entertain?
I would view this as a friendly amendment.
On the oral amendment, Senator Higgins has offered to strike the words shall not on line 2.12 and replace with the word may. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion is carried. Now to the bill as amendment, and Senator Laurie.
Actually, Mr. Chair, if you would entertain a question about something you just said process-wise, is it your intent to be letting fiscal bills out of this committee to go separately to the floor? That's what I just took from
you. No. I hope I said that it would have to go to the Finance Committee, but I don't know of any other committees it would need to go to.
Okay.
So that was my – that's what I meant to say if I didn't say it.
Okay, and then from the Finance Committee, would it – Is your intent to take to have an omnibus finance bill though at the end of the day, or would
I'm not sure yet. To be honest with you, Senator Laurie, I've had some requests from a number of interests around on different issues that do have some finance components to them. We've talked about those generally, and I've invited some of those proposals to be brought to the committee in bill form, at least for purposes of discussion. We have not gotten any general direction about, for example, are we going to have a finance bill that would entail, for example, looking at reserves for a way of funding it, or if we have finance considerations, would we have to just look at other places within the budget that we have to find changes that would accommodate the things that we're interested in? I haven't gotten an answer to that yet, but I am at this point willing to at least hear some discussion about things that have a finance implication without necessarily making that decision at this point.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the decision is upon us in a very few minutes with this bill. Once we let it out of this committee to finance, would you bring it back here if you were? Or would you – I mean, typically what
right.
we used to do was always just keep them here and put together an omnibus bill and bring that to finance. If you let it out of here – I think that decision is it's time.
Well, and I first want to talk to and ask Senator Gazelka what you've heard some of the discussion and some of the questions, and what is your view of this? Where is this heading? You've heard some questions about the need to maybe do some additional work on the bill. Is it your wish to have that continue in this committee, or what is your
Mr.
point?
Chair, I know there was some discussion about a bigger EBT reform bill. It could perhaps be put into there. You know, the fiscal note all relates to the photo requirement. Last year's fiscal note was zero, and actually there easily could have been considered a surplus there. But, you know, so that perhaps is the place that it should be considered is whether we're going to put it in a bigger bill and whether or not we need to deal with the photo issues now.
Senator Benson, were you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and we've gotten off my topic, but we had talked lines 1.15 and following the residency requirements, and those residency requirements mirror section 256D.02 subdivision A. And so when we were talking about shelter requirements, it mirrors what's already in statute to the letter. And so to dispel some of those questions, I went and got my big burgundy book.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Senator Benson, what was that you said, and what section does that relate to?
I apologize.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, 256D.02, subdivision 12A, resident. For purposes of eligibility for general assistance and general assistance medical care, a person must be a resident of the state. And then if you go down to the points following, a women's shelter, time spent in a women's shelter. A resident is a person living in the state for at least 30 days, in this case, with the intention of making a person's home here and not for a temporary purpose. Time spent in a shelter for battered women shall count towards satisfying the 30-day residency requirement. All applicants for these programs are required to demonstrate requisite intent and can do so in the following ways: by showing that the applicant remains a residence, maintains a residence at a verified address other than a place of public accommodation. An applicant may verify residence by presenting a valid state driver's license, a state identification card, a voter registration card, rent receipt, a statement by landlord, apartment manager, or homeowner verifying that an individual is residing at the address, or other form of verification approved by the commissioner. So it's in existing statute already, and I just wanted to clarify because there were questions about some of the veracity of the language here. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Senator Benson, that's the paragraph or the section right before the section that we're amending.
Immediately before.
And you said that was for general assistance and general assistance medical care, so why do we have it in there twice?
Well, I think, Senator, is this a, and maybe Senator Benson, is this a separate section of law that this is being inserted into?
This, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, would add a subdivision 12B. 12B. So immediately following 12A, it would add 12B to this section.
Mr. Chair, my point is, Senator Benson, if it's the exact same language, why are we putting it in there?
Senator Higgins, let's, Senator, Ms. White, why don't, if you could comment on that, I think you were involved in the drafting of the bill.
Mr. Chair and Senators, subdivision 12A is repealed in this bill.
Okay.
Because it had to do with general assistance and general assistance medical care.
Which isn't around
general
anymore.
Assistance medical care no longer exists. So I lifted a portion of subdivision 12A, put it in the bill for the residency requirement for general assistance.
All right.
So it's true. The definition of resident is identical to what it was before, with the exception of changing the residency requirement from 30 days to 60 days. However, in Senator Gazelka's bill, it does not include the hardship exceptions for the residency requirement. So that's the difference between 12A and 12B.
Right.
And Mr.
Senator Lurie?
On that point, you know, actually, I thought I heard another fairly significant difference when Senator Benson was reading that. She went on beyond what is in lines 2.1 to 2.4 here to list a homeowner's verification that this individual is living with them. Right now, I mean, it's like it's not a hotel. It's basically, you know, a rent receipt. And so, I mean, we could have people here for a very long time living with parents, cousins, you know, brothers, sisters, and unable to meet this this requirement. And so I think that is, in my mind, as you read that, you know, this paragraph ended before yours did, and there was some significant additional words.
And Ms. White, do you want to comment on that? Was that the intent?
Mr. Chair and Senator, that is true. I take it back. The definition of resident is different in 12B. based on Senator Gazelka's requests and requests from people who were involved with Jackie
okay.
Bill. I apologize for that.
All right, thank you. And Senator Benson?
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Benson.
If I may, I apologize to Senator Gazelka for mucking up his language and for doubting our counsel, but we were asking about other homeless shelters, and I wanted to be sure that we understood that this was already an approved statute, and that was okay. My point that...
Right, so the point was that this is language that is in existing law in 12A, even though that's being changed a little bit as described by Ms. White and Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, can you read us the parts that we're now eliminating as a way to verify the residents? Something about a voucher from somebody and...
If I may defer to Senate Counsel, I apologize for bringing out statute when it is not necessarily my role, but if it's all right with Senator Higgins, I would defer to Senate Counsel.
I can hear you better.
Mr. Chair and members, the part that was not included in the definition of resident in the bill is a statement by a landlord, apartment manager, or homeowner verifying that the individual is residing at the address or other form of verification approved by the commissioner.
Okay. All right. Senator Gazelka, any comment on the language?
Mr. Chair, I'd prefer to leave the language as it is.
All right. Members, we do have some other folks who've indicated they'd like to testify, and I know we've tried to work a little bit on the bill itself, and I do want to give people who've come here an opportunity to have their opportunity to speak to us, but Senator Laurie?
Well, just real quick, the last characterization that came from a member was that these are little changes, and I'd like to just say in many of our minds, these are not little changes to the residency requirement that existed in prior law.
Yep, I understand. Thank you. So if I'm not trying to close off any additional questions members may have, but I do want to give people who've come here and indicated a desire to testify an opportunity to do so before we exceed our time limit, but the first person I have on the list is Angel Buchner. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. And I'm going to ask, as you've been sitting here listening, you know we've had a little issue with the microphones, so please bring the microphones close and identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Deb Housey, and I'm with the Minnesota Welfare Rights Committee. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sorry, could you say Deb?
Deborah, H-O-W-Z-E.
Housey.
Yes.
Thank you.
And my name is Angel Buchner, and I'm also with the Minnesota Welfare Rights Committee.
All right.
Okay.
Please.
We are here to testify against both the bills being heard today. Both bills come from a place of stigmatizing poor families and people with disabilities. These bills don't make financial sense. Finally, the bills show either ignorance of or a bullying discarding forth the realities of living in extreme poverty. To start with a reality check, did you know that general assistance grants in Minnesota is $203 per month? A person can only qualify for GA if he or she is disabled. This $203 per month is not a supplement to other cash funds. $203 cash per month is all this disabled person has to live on, period. If you are a family hungry and you have to wait for 30 days to become a resident here, would you want to do that if your family was hungry? Now for a reality check on the infant grant. For impoverished family with children, for a family of three, the cash infant grant is $532 per month. This is 60% below the poverty level. You tried to find an apartment that would take a family of three with that kind of money. The infant grant has not been raised since 1986, 26 years ago. But the state has government that has raised their, they get raises every year. And I'm not understanding why is it that people here on MFIP, does not have an increase since, it's been 26 years ago. And that's just ridiculous. What about the people that work in the workforce program and they have to work for free you know, with the sum, with, you know, with no money at all. They have STS that people have to work for free. So when people, when you consider laws like this, you make life harder. Poor families and disabled individuals, when they are at an all-time low in their lives, furthermore, in these economic times, more and more people are slipping through the ranks. The EBT card exchange. This would be another form of ID to track the poor people. People, period. Can it be used to cash a check? Can it be used to get on the bus? Can it use, be used for another ID? We already have. Can it be used to vote? Since this state has other IDs, which one would this really be used for? This is an expensive exchange to fix a non-existent issue. What is the point of doubling the number of EBT cards that the state has to issue? There would be more county stuff to do. Time has the name has to be imposed on the card. How we assure that this won't make it even harder for people that with disabilities have others to shop for them. This is the time. This is not the time to change this and put people's card faces on it when you know people, other people have got to use it. We are against the so-called residency requirements, especially against doubling the length of time being eligible. When we are broke and desperate, we don't move from other states for fun, and certainly not for these sub-poverty programs. We move because we have concrete hopes and plans to make a better life. It's not applying for a fishing license. We apply these programs to survive. It's time for economic crisis. Everyone in this county should have equal rights to a better life. In conclusion, this kind of mean-spirited tinkering with this already totally inadequate programs doesn't serve a humane person purpose. It doesn't even serve as a reasonable financial purpose. We urge you to vote against these bills. And I just want to speak for myself. I'm a mother of 11 children. I have 6 boys, 5 girls, 25 grandchildren, 1 great-grandchild. I was with my kid's father for 25 years. He died at the age of 39, and my baby was 5 years old. I had to use the food stamp program. He did work, as well as myself. My kids was able to get his Social Security and stuff like that. And recently I had my daughter with a disability. I had to take care of my grandson, which I had MFIP for him, and which they gave me only $250 for him. Since all that, and I'm just going to make it short because time is short, I myself lost my job. I could not get unemployment. I lost my housing. I had cancer. I had to have it removed. I live now with my daughter, with her 2 children, and I am, if she hadn't took me in, I don't know what I would be doing. And 430, and now I had to go through all these hoops and stuff to get 437 that I cannot get housing with. I pay my daughter $300 with that money, and the rest of it goes on. How can you, you know, with, you got to buy clothing, you got to buy personal stuff, you got to help still pay bills and other, put gas in your car. If your gas gives your car, you got to pay your insurance. And for someone to only say that people are coming here for $432 to live on is ridiculous. It can't happen. It's not happening now. People are living, is homeless. It is bad out there. You all need to, people know somebody who got an EBT card, I'm sure. We are not using it, misusing it. And those that are, I wouldn't know about it. It's a reason for everything that happens in life. But it's a shame that we have always got to be put down in the bottom. Everybody's getting raises, and it hasn't been raised in 26 years. And that is something that needs to be totally looked at. You can't get good housing. You can't even, I can't even, my place that I was renting was $886 out of my paycheck. And I didn't even make that much money. Half of my income went to rent and food and bills and stuff like that. I didn't qualify for this. I didn't qualify for that. They make me jump through hoops to get emergency assistance. I had to devolve everything in my bank account that I had. I had to even spend my 401k to live on. You know, it makes people sick. I got sick over this kind of stuff. I had to go down to the workforce. I'm 54 years old, and I'm capable of looking for me a job, you know, just to get 432. It's the bills and stuff, they need to truly, truly be looked at. because we are, you know, just because you need help from the state don't mean that you don't have morals and understanding and stuff like that, because we do. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on and on, but I just been listening what's going on today, and the men and people that are making these bills, they don't even, it's ridiculous to come and you don't know to answer, how to answer questions.
Thank you, please, we'll need to, and Ms. Buchner, did you have any testimony to make?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, as far as the EBT requirements, is extending the days from 30 to 60 days. Those days are like life and death for people that are moving from one city to another city, okay? I'm sure, you know, that person that the senator has spoke to about her moving from Chicago to Minnesota to get, you know, better welfare benefits, I mean, I think those are just bumper sticker type of tactics. You know, these are just poor bashing bills. These bills are always against poor people. These bills are also against people that are working. And, you know, so it's not all, you know, we're not all trying to live off of welfare.
You can't live off of it.
It's totally insane. People are out here dying. We are literally dying. We're losing housing. We're losing things. The foreclosure crisis is a whole nother step to what's happening to renters. So, I mean, you know, you really think about this EBT thing and how it affects people who are trying to move from one state to another. It's not about, you know, oh, because, you know, welfare's got the best. You know, you guys imposed a time limit. So there is still a time limit on welfare. You know, the 5 years, you know, to get out of poverty is going to take longer than 5 years. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We have Jessica Webster and Judy Gordon. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with the Legal Services Advocacy Project. I'm going to abbreviate my testimony significantly because I think a lot of the matters have been touched on already. But I think one of the things that is difficult to watch in your discussion and your debate is that this is not an unsettled area of law. This is a very settled area of law. We have a 1999 Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision, Sains v. Roe, that explicitly rejected some of the statements that Senator Gazelka said today. You know, we now have a legislative record, Senator Gazelka saying on the legislative record that he wants to take care of those in our state and prevent those coming to Minnesota for benefits that should be reserved for Minnesotans. The Supreme Court has explicitly rejected that we can create different classes of citizens within a state. You know, our founding fathers, through the U.S. Constitution, explicitly rejected that we would be 50 nations with border fences and visas and passports. We are 50 states, and citizens are entitled to the privileges and immunities of each state that they go to. And to Senator Sharon's question, it's a right to travel, but the right to travel explicitly protects a person's claim that they are going to a state and intending to be a resident of that state. 30 days is where we have established is the benchmark for making someone wait to be treated like the other citizens of that state. To just follow up on Mr. Tugood's points from the department and this concept of the welfare magnet, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But I want everybody on this committee to know that every single one of our neighbors has a more generous cash benefit than Minnesota right now. North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin have more generous cash benefits than Minnesota. So if you're going to come to the Midwest for a cash benefit, you're not going to choose Minnesota if that's your only intention. People come here for our educational opportunities, our parks and trails. They hear that there's something here called Minnesota Nice. I mean, I think that people come here for a lot of reasons, and it's not just the cash benefit. And if anyone would like to, I would like more information from Legal Aid on those cash benefits and different We have done some of that analysis of border states, and we are not standing out as this beacon of benefits. We really aren't. I think that 25 years ago, Minnesota was on the cutting edge of really making a commitment to ending poverty. 25 years ago, we were giving a family of three $532 to pay for housing and utilities and really try to end poverty. 25 years later, it's the same amount, and people really aren't making it. They're not getting out of poverty in our system. So I think I'll end my testimony there because I think a lot of other points have already been made. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Webster. Judy Gordon, is she here? I also have Teresa Nelson. Are there either Ms. Gordon or Ms. Nelson here? Thank you for waiting, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Teresa Nelson, and I'm legal counsel for the ACLU of Minnesota. The ACLU is a private nonprofit organization funded and supported by over 8,500 members statewide. Our mission is to defend constitutional rights. We oppose Senate File 1507 because it violates the U.S. constitutional right to equal protection and the right to travel. And I'm going to go into a little more detail about the law because I think it's important. Over 40 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Shapiro v. Thompson that durational residency requirements burden both the right to travel and the right to equal protection. Courts assessing whether or not a durational residency restriction comports with the Constitution look to the state's purpose for enacting the provision. Under Shapiro and its progeny, durational residency requirements will be subject to strict scrutiny if, number one, their intent is to impede interstate travel as a primary objective. Number two, when the provision actually deters such travel. Or number three, if the purpose is to penalize people for interstate travel. Under strict scrutiny, the government has to show that the restriction is narrowly tailored, needed to serve a compelling government interest. It's an extremely high standard. Even where strict scrutiny does not apply, the government must still show that the restriction is rationally related to a legitimate government purpose to survive constitutional challenges. While Shapiro dealt with a one-year durational residency restriction, numerous cases since that time have examined less onerous restrictions, including those that require that a recipient receive only those benefits that they would have received in their previous home, their previous state. There's also at least one case where a federal court examined a 60-day durational residency restriction similar to that proposed by Senate File 1507. In Warwick v. Snyder, the ACLU of Pennsylvania challenged that state's 60-day residency restriction. The court held that the requirement served to penalize the right to travel because indigent new residents who were denied cash assistance, quote, run the very real risk of being homeless and without sufficient food or other basic necessities. Food and shelter are the very same basic life necessities that the Shapiro court found to merit application of the strict scrutiny test. Under Senate File 1507, we have the same risks for individuals. Applying strict scrutiny in Pennsylvania, the court invalidated that 60-day requirement. But the court went on to note that even if we were applying the more deferential rational basis standard, that 60-day requirement would fail. Although we have Senate File 1507 on its face doesn't have any legislative purpose, we do have the author's statement today that really the intent is to deter interstate travel. And that is one of the things that the Supreme Court has said triggers strict scrutiny. So you have to show that there's a compelling state interest here. Well, what's the state interest in Senate File 1507? Just a plain reading of it, it appears that the only interest that this serves, other than impeding interstate travel, which is improper, the only other interest it serves is to save money. You look at the two requirements. Why else include these two provisions in one bill? There's a photo requirement that costs money. There's a 60-day residency requirement that saves money. The bill is very likely revenue neutral, and I think the Senator Gazelka has said that as well. So In some contexts, saving money is certainly a legitimate government interest. However, the U.S. Supreme Court in Shapiro noted that you cannot do so in this manner. The court said, we recognize that a state has a valid interest in preserving the fiscal integrity of its programs. It may legitimately attempt to limit its expenditures, whether for public assistance, public education, or any other program. But a state may not accomplish such a purpose by invidious distinctions between classes of its citizens. It could not, for example, reduce expenditures for education by barring indigent children from its schools. Similarly, in the cases before us, appellants must do more than show that denying welfare benefits to new residents saves money. The saving of welfare costs cannot justify an otherwise invidious classification. Because Senate File 1507 infringes on the constitutional right to equal protection and the right to travel, and it cannot satisfy even rational basis review, we respectfully urge you to oppose Senate File 1507. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. I did get a request from someone who's here, and I apologize, I don't know. Sorry, Senator Lord, do you have a question?
Well, actually, I wanted to follow up, and thank you, Ms. Nelson, for that testimony. And actually, you know, much has been made today of the Wisconsin State Court, again, decision from back in, like, 1992. But you reminded me that in 1999, the U.S. Supreme Court kind of laid down the law that it is strict scrutiny that these residency requirements are put to. And, again, the Wisconsin State Court that analyzed it only put it to a much more deferential rational basis test, even in that. So, I mean, much was made of that Wisconsin decision, and it was said that Minnesota courts would likely act the same as Wisconsin courts. Well, no, they wouldn't. It's pretty settled law that these need to be subjected to strict scrutiny analysis. I mean, I think that it's been demonstrated clearly through the testimony today that this bill isn't ready for prime time at the very best, and I'd like to move that we lay it on the table. I so move.
Senator Lurie, I would ask that you might at least let us hear the testimony from one other witness before we take a motion on this.
Yeah, if there's other witnesses, I'll withdraw my motion.
Oh, thank you. And did we have there was a person that indicated they wished to speak. Please come forward and identify yourself.
Hey. My name is Carrie Felder, and when I was younger, we were on welfare, and we used the system. And there's four children in my family. And I just want to explain how children drop through the system at that age, because I would have been the one to drop through the system because I was the oldest. And out of all of the stress that it puts on the family when there's not enough money to go around, it then falls, you know, to the next one in line. Out of the four children in my family, I'm probably the most uneducated in some areas, but out of that, we've got a chemical engineer. He was the first black student to graduate valedictorian in Minneapolis, and he's also got his MBA. My sister is an HR specialist who also has her MBA. And my youngest got her first degree in communications and is now at the University of Minnesota getting her degree in science. When you are able to help people to make those moves to do better, the outcome, you will never know. So I'm asking you to stop. It's really family bashing when you don't give them enough to survive on. And if you don't give them enough to survive on, you'll never know what they can achieve.
Thank you, Ms. Felton, for coming. And, Senator Gazelka, what I'd like to suggest is there have been some questions, and you've indicated that there are some things that you might be willing to work with members on in the bill. I think it might be appropriate just to lay this over and see if there's some additional work that you may want to do. We may have a finance bill. I'm not sure yet. If we do, this may be a part of it. If you're agreeable, I would suggest we lay this over for further consideration, and if that's acceptable to you, then I would request that we do that.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good idea.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, members, for your attention and very thoughtful discussion, and we are adjourned.